This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
So, Gary, I just want to bring you in because you are fascinating and we've spoken on different panels and I've been on your show and we just have known our paths would cross again. And I instantly said, I have to have you on this podcast. You're perfect for an interesting discussion about things that people would never think about.
I really appreciate that. And it's fun for me to be on this because I really pay attention and I just genuinely admire your skill set as an entrepreneur. And it's very impressive to me. And I think because I was born in the former Soviet Union, I grew up in a very kind of like work ethic was the way out kind of like DNA. I just see, like, I really see you're just putting in real effort and sustained effort. And I'm really excited to be on the show because I really, really, really admire it.
Well, I'm excited. And that we just end up going places you never thought. But I want to get to the beginning with you. Your company's called VaynerX. A lot of people listening don't even necessarily know who you are and, yep. and who what you do. So how would you describe yourself?
The way I describe myself is an entrepreneur because I have my hand in a lot of businesses. I used to call it a businessman when I was a teenager.
Okay.
Entrepreneur, when you and I were kind of growing up, was like, I don't know, like it had like some weird negative, like it didn't seem like a good thing. Like I'd only heard it a couple of times, but it seemed fluffy. It seemed like you were some rich kid that like didn't want to work and you just said you were. So for me, it was businessman. But my sister reminded me, it was her birthday the other day, shout out to Liz Novello. She said to me, you know what was exhausting about you? Literally 80% of our childhood was working. And I thought it was fun. Like it snowed and we had to go shovel people's driveways. Like it's a beautiful summer day and we have to make lemonade at 6 a.m. I just really liked it. I liked the building and then having customers and making signs. And
you like the grit. You like the grit and the story too.
Yeah.
So there's so much to be learned from the street and from the grit and from the non-business school and from not a real job, like from just being half an animal.
I couldn't agree more.
And I believe you were also selling baseball cards as a kid, right?
Yeah. Baseball cards were my jam. Like I grew up in that 1986 to 93 Jersey malls, just all sorts of like hustler kind of like street kid stuff.
My father was best friends with Joe Torre and he had a major, major baseball card collection who he left to Joe Torre.
Get out.
Yep. Not to me.
Love.
We would, but keep going. You keep going. I knew you'd find that interesting. It was in my notes. So go ahead.
I grew up in a very cocoon immigrant family. Like I was born in the Soviet Union in Belarus. We were like very insular. Like my parents didn't really have friends because they were embarrassed of their accent. We like lived in our little own bubble.
Okay.
My dad worked every day from the day we got to America in 1978 until he could buy his own small liquor store in Springfield, New Jersey. He built up a real business. We became very much middle class, like from zero. I'm just so impressed and grateful. But being the oldest son from the old country at 14, on my 14th birthday, like my life literally got flipped upside down. Like I went from being really successful at the sports card thing where I was making $500, $1,000, $2,000, which was like $1 million back then, to my dad saying, that's over, and now you work in the store. And I would go to my dad's store at 7 a.m. and leave at 9 at night as a 14-year-old, and I would bag ice in my dad's basement because we sold a lot of ice because it was a beer store, literally for 10 hours a day, dusting shelves, bagging at the register, and that framed me.
Got it. So that kind of work ethic instilled in you really brought you to where you are today.
Correct.
And now you have a company called VaynerX and you're the CEO of VaynerMedia. So what exactly do those companies do?
VaynerX, which holds 8 or 9 companies, but VaynerMedia is literally 2020 Mad Men. So that is the main company that I'm the CEO of. We are an advertising agency that does the,
okay.
like the Dwayne Wade Budweiser video last year that got watched 100 million times. We came up with that idea and we made it. Baby Nut. Mr. Peanut died at the Super Bowl this year and Baby Nut was born. That was us. We are literally an ad firm. Now, 3 years ago, I bought PureWow.com, which is in the Refinery 29 Pop Sugar.
I know who they are.
Yep. So I bought that company 3 years ago. So we started the publishing side of my world and we launched a men's site 1:37 p.m. a year ago. I also started a speaking bureau because I was doing very well and I was with CAA for 8 years and I thought we could do it better, and I thought that would be good for me. And so Vayner Speakers was born a year ago. That sits in Vayner X.
You're an ad guy, but the modern day, with all tentacles of media, all the platforms in order to get the message out. So you have to know so much information. I couldn't do it. Sounds fucking exhausting.
In the same way that people see the incredible things that you accomplish and hustling, and like when I see you hustling in liquor stores and bottle signing, I'm like, that's my, like, that was when you really, for me, I was like, I'm with this person.
Well, thank you. And I do want to talk about a company that I've invested in. But first, I want to get some information on some of the companies that you've invested in early, the ones that help you get to this point. So these are Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Uber, Snap, and Venmo. So holy shit. Did you make a fuck ton of money off this? Is this a big part of why your kids will never see you eating dirt like you grew up?
It's right. I would say it's in between, but it's real eight figures, right? So it's real stuff.
Wow. Real stuff.
What I'm really good at, and I feel comfortable at this point saying this, is I'm very observant of consumer and human behavior, just an inch, call it a month or a year quicker than, let's say, the masses. And in that time, I'm able to execute, whether that's investing, whether that's starting companies. So when Facebook and Twitter came along, I literally put all my money into it, all of it, all my savings.
Crazy. You knew it. You felt it.
I knew it.
I knew it about Amazon years ago. My financial guy invested, but not enough. I said to him, this was years ago, I was like, everybody's going to start buying everything on here. We have to be. And I wasn't heavily enough invested. And I always go with my gut now on something.
Good for you.
So Gary, I mentioned to you an investment that I made in a company called Cameo. And for listeners at home, it's a video sharing site where celebrities can send personalized videos to fans. And I told Mark Cuban in the very beginning, I'm like, you should get in and you should be on and you should invest. And he wasn't into it. And you, I'm curious if you're A, on it, and you probably have enough going on that you aren't, but what do you think about it?
I personally am not on it.
Why?
Two things stand out. I really am quiet about my nonprofit work, but I'm very proud of it. And I've been challenged at times and love showing people the truth. So I have that thing. And then two,
wait,
I don't
want
to-
What does that have to do with it? Cameo's
I'll explain.
Not just-
I'll explain. Okay. I go to Cameo and I'm like, they come to me very early on and I'm like, hey, I just don't want to monetize my audience for access to me. It's just not where I want to go with it, but okay. I really appreciate it. And I think it could really work for a lot of people. And I think it's cool. And I have no negative towards it. It's just not right for me in the relationship I built. And then they made a great point. They're like, hey, what about for nonprofit? And I sat on that for a little while. Oh, I could give the money to nonprofit. And I ultimately, I just decided that that didn't work for me. But what do I think about it? I think it's a very natural extension of the world we live in, mm-hmm. and is a very, very good tool for a lot of people in different parts of their career. And I also think that there's a really powerful long tail. And more importantly, and this is more important, I think it's an incredible consumer experience because
Beyond.
I think there's a lot of
I'm betting on it big time.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people want to make a video. Like I want to buy it for my friends all the time about like, because everybody has so many inside jokes with each other about celebrities or athletes. And,
or not
and then
like a screech, like a $24 person on there is going to be correct. Such an inside joke. I live for it because you said the things that you've bet on and I've watched some that you've called a mm-hmm. lot of different things. But you called the Joe Rogan $100 million deal. Mm-hmm. I'm betting on Cameo personally, and that's why I'm on it because I also love the interpersonal connection. But
good
what's interesting about what you just said is it's funny, I wanted to talk about it in an article because I haven't said that it's like I've invested. People just think I'm on there and I haven't really promoted that because there's a lot of sort of, you know, not,
yeah,
there's a lot of different level people there. So I haven't been promoting me being on there. But I am church and state with philanthropy and with business. When I do business, I get paid. If I work, yep. I want to get paid. I spend months and months out of my year not getting paid and spending my own money to do philanthropy. The twain shall not meet. My publicist was like, oh, well, Tori Spelling got in trouble because she was doing Cameo and it's not for charity. I'm not doing Cameo for charity. I'm doing Cameo because it's a personal appearance where I engage with the person
yep.
and talk to them and laugh to that with them. And I can't travel doing personal appearances all over the country. So that's that. But when I go over and I go to Guatemala and Mexico and Puerto Rico and the Bahamas, that's me spending my money, spending my time, and the two are totally separate for me. So it's, I'm glad you brought that
totally
up because
get it.
I am unapologetic about making money
for
what I do, and
I don't want
any credit for spending money on charity.
Same.
So that's interesting.
Same. We're very similar that way.
So you have a massive audience. It's almost like a cult-like audience, and I want to know who they are.
The answer is it's run the gamut over the last decade. And I think that's important for everybody to hear because I don't think it's like TV world or like the way you and I grew up in business world, even the last 30 years where it hasn't been like, it's this. So it's definitely entrepreneurs. It's definitely become a little bit of parenting over the last couple of years. It got very young in the last 24 months because I exploded on TikTok. You know, only in the last 6 months do I have 12 and 11 year olds coming up to me at the airport. So, you know, it's evolving. It's evolving.
You talk a lot about TikTok and I want to talk to you about this because when we were on the phone, you were like, you need to be selling on TikTok. And I read what you said, that it's not just about dancing and you are an ad guy by trade. So the vehicle is really important to you. Like the vehicle is everything. You have to get the message out in an unconventional way and in a 360 way.
It's actually a little bit different. I have no emotion to where the attention of the consumer is. I don't get to pick. I just reverse engineer where it is.
And you know where it is. So you're telling people where the fish are.
That's a good way to put it.
So my thing is though, but you said you're observant and you're paying attention and I know a lot less than you and people like Mark Cuban, who I talk about a lot of the stuff too, because I'm not as well read. I don't pour through everything. I know a lot less. So I have a much more sort of basic viewpoint of a lot of things. And it does serve me in some ways because you guys know things at a microscopic level. So I know things more on like a regular person level, just with my gut instinct. And I'm not belittling myself.
I would argue 93% of my 100% is exactly what you just said about yourself.
Okay. All right. Well, so that you do have that other 7 and I really don't.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
My feeling, just from what I see as a mother in my home with a daughter who's like pretty much now in the target audience of this TikTok thing. So I see now the live version of when we were growing up, the magazines of the extensions and the eyelashes and the asses and the contouring and 15-year-olds making money and stripper poles coming and my daughter doing gyration. My daughter's very earthy. She's very like Malibu. She surfs, wakeboards, she snowboards. She's very chill. She's just, and all of a sudden, and she still has her own way of being earthy, but like now a half top is coming in and now a gyration is coming in and now these dances and she doesn't realize she's doing some little dance with her butt popping and it's like a booty pop and I'm like, what the fuck is going on in my house right now? I'm raising a stripper.
You mean the same thing that happened with Madonna on MTV in 1984? I'm just trying to contextualize.
I think it's different.
No, it's not different. Let me explain to you why. Everything you just said that you're about to blame TikTok for was happening on YouTube and Instagram and 700,000 other websites.
Not for my daughter, it wasn't. She wasn't even on it.
She wasn't on it because she was fucking 7.
No, she wasn't on it because by 10, she's still not on Instagram. It's just not where she's supposed to be. So
it's
a loophole into dancing.
Well, here's the good news. It's not a loophole. Good news. You're fully in control. Tell her to get the fuck off.
Right, I might. But you're saying beyond, and I feel that it's age inappropriate for me. I feel like it's thirsty. And it's also a copycat vehicle. Everybody's copying each other on there. And you're saying
everybody's copying each other. And wherever you went to junior high, whenever the most popular girl did something, everybody fucking copied.
No, adults are doing it. Adults are copying content and trying to make it their own. It's not your own if you copy it. I was saying, I saw this funny thing Molly Sims did, this funny little bit that she did. And I saw a funny bit somebody else did. I was too naive to know 65 other people have done the same funny bit. That's not original content. It's not fucking funny if it's not original. I'm going to go take Don Rickles' entire act and I'm going to do it as my own and I'm going to pretend that it's mine because I'm going to post it on TikTok and tell all those jokes so nobody knows.
You're arguing that interpretations of a dance trend are the same as taking somebody's entire comedy act, and I would argue that that's not the same.
It's still intellectual property. It's property. You made it up. You made up a dance move. Everybody copies it. I don't get it. I don't copy anyone on anything, not even a recipe.
I would argue that you do get it. Honestly, I'm on the record saying that.
I get it, but I don't like it. I don't have to like it.
Now we're friends. Now I appreciate. I love you so much for that sentence. If everybody's listening right now, in that sentence, I'm just going to say this right now. When I was 6 years old, three kids in my neighborhood that were my friends had a Jets jersey and we were Jet friends. I run in one day and say to my mom, I want a Jets jersey. We're poor as shit. My mom looks me dead in the face and you know exactly where this is going and saying, that's cute. Yeah. And I go back outside to play. Why my mom's the greatest human on earth? She stayed up at night from 10 to midnight and she knitted me a Jets jersey. It's my number one prize possession. And I remember when I got it, I
understood.
But
did you like it then? Or you felt like Eddie Murphy getting the sandwich? That would that
look
like
no McDonald's. I love you. I love you. We talk about that all the time because Russians make that burger that he was referring to.
On white bread.
I felt great about it at the time. Okay. I was very emotionally intelligent from the beginning. And I understood something really special happened in that kind of, I was appreciative. It meant something to me. And I didn't give a fuck even back then about the Joneses. So I didn't care if my friends were going to make fun of me. And luckily I had great friends. Shout out to Eric Godfrey, Andy Greco, and Robbie Turnick. They didn't make me feel worse. And it became my prized possession. And somewhere around 9 or 10 or 11 or 12, I realized that the reason that happened was because I didn't have as much. And I decided I was going to buy the New York Jets. The reason I'm telling that story right now is in the sentence that you just said, I understand it, but I don't like it. In that sentence is why I believe I will buy the New York Jets, Bethany. I believe that I don't think that my opinions should dictate my professional actions. And I think that most people subconsciously and consciously do. And in that year is when I strike like a cobra and create the opportunity.
Yeah, I understand. All right, so we're almost done with our conversation and you've accomplished so much that's indisputable, but I want to know if you think you've made it.
I have definitely not made it because I would like to be known as one of the most substantial entrepreneurs of all time and I'm not even close to that yet, but I'm pumped because I think I can do a lot of damage over the next 40 years.
Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I'm 44.
You're young. Wow. Okay. And yeah, so you don't think you've made it yet. Okay.
Look, let me rephrase. Cause it's important. I'm not confused that I've done some stuff that is reserved for a small percentage of people. My great hope is to never feel like I've made it.
That's the thing. You're in the journey. It's not the destination. You're on the journey.
When I tell you that is my, like, I would be devastated if the light goes out.
Yeah.
If I actually wake up and I'm like, it. Let's go to the beach. You know what's really funny? And I want to find these clips for you and send it to you because you're going to realize how many interchanging things go on with you. And I always say that the only thing I would retire for is to then full-time go to the track and bet on the ponies.
That's hysterical. Oh my God.
When I went to college and was that shit student, I went to Suffolk Downs every single day instead of going to class. All like 2.5 out of the 4 years.
That's hysterical.
And can I get even more deep with you? And this, we're going to have actually dinner and like really talk about this one day. It's because I felt an incredible association to the people.
Well, that's, yeah. You like the nature of the beast. You like the art of the deal. You like the meat. You like all of that. Well, I love this. And it's so funny. I have my notebook next to me and it says Hustle 2020. So it's perfect that I'm talking to you. So everybody, where should they find you? Where should they look you up to find out more? Because you're fascinating and we haven't scratched the surface.
Gary Bee is where you can find me. Thank you, Beth. Thank you so much. I wish you well. Good luck with this.
Big kiss, blowing you a kiss.
Take care. Bye.
Stay safe. Bye.
All right. Episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Hey, podcast. Joe from Team Gary here. Today's highlighted review is That Episode Was Great by Kevin Hall. I really enjoyed the episode with David Rubenstein. Such a different type of guest than what you normally interview. So many interesting points I never would have thought of. Thank you so much, Gary, for your continued effort in bringing on new guests. Thanks to Kevin Hall. Keep those reviews coming. We could highlight yours next.